Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 39. I'm recording it on Tuesday, November 4th, 2008. The PE10 level this morning is 16. That's fair value. So stocks purchased today offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is The Future of Investing, Part 3. I recorded a set of podcasts, there were four of them, under the title, Passive Investing is the Most Emotional Investing Approach of All. And what I did in that podcast is I went back through the first 6 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate and made note of 35 developments that caused me, I think I called them 35 warning signs or warning bells, 35 developments that caused me to lose confidence in the passive investing model of understanding how stocks work. That's the dominant model of today. Instead of looking backward, this series of podcasts looks forward. And what I did here was I also limited myself to 35, but instead of listing 35 negative signs from the past, I put together a list of 35 signs that would be positive signs for the future. Things we need to do to complete the transition from the failed passive investing model to the model of stock investing of the future, the rational investing model. The key distinction is that passive investing is an emotional model. What passive investing does is it creates an artificial world where valuations do not affect long-term returns and where there is thus no need to change your stock allocation, even when stock prices rise to insanely dangerous levels. And the rational investing model rejects that premise that valuations do not matter. And the rational investing model is rooted in reality. It's rooted in what the historical stock return data tells us about how stocks have always performed in the past. So the root assumption is that valuations do affect long-term returns, and investors who hope to have long-term success must change their stock allocations in response to dramatic price changes. So in the first podcast, I went through points 1 through 5, five steps that we need to make the shift to a new, more realistic investing model. And in part 2 of this series, I went through points 6 through 11. So for part 3 of the future of investing, I start with point 12. Point 12 is we need to promote the new cash or the super cash. Now, what this gets at, and again, I think this is worthy of I've said this on several earlier points. This is worthy of a podcast all its own. When I, you know, someday when some free time opens up. But one of the big problems that we have, that middle class investors have in learning how to invest effectively for the long term, is that almost all of the information bits that we are exposed to are generated by the stock selling industry. Not always directly. A lot of times it's filtered through journalists, things like that. But the sources that the journalists use are usually people in the stock selling industry. So surprise, surprise, the information we get is heavily biased in favor of the purchase of stocks. Now, that doesn't mean that stocks are not a good investment class. Stocks are my favorite investment class. I think they're the best route to financial freedom for the middle class investor, but we need to hear the other side of the story. In any life endeavor, you don't want to hear only one side of the story. Think if you were trying to decide which car to buy. You would you would, one of the things you would look at, you would look at websites, you might look at consumer reports, you would look at the sales pitches even, you would look at the advertising. But you would hope that the different companies would advertise the features that make their car special, and by sorting through them, you would be able to find the best car for you. Well, it would be nice if it worked that way in the investing realm. If the people selling us stocks would promote stocks, and the people selling us alternatives to stocks would promote the alternatives to stocks. But there's very little promotion of cash, or what I like to call super cash. Super cash is not sticking your money in a money market fund where you're probably going to obtain a small return. Super cash is looking for alternatives to stocks that are super safe. So they don't have the volatility of stocks. You can be certain about your investment, but they offer not exceptional returns, but reasonable returns. So the greatest example of this is Treasury Inflation Protected Securities. That's an asset class with a government guarantee attached to it. So it's 100% safe, no risk whatsoever. And TIPS were offering at the top of the price bubble at a time when stocks were offering a negative long-term return. The expected return on stocks back in January of 2000 was a negative number. Back at that time, TIPS were offering an annual return of 4% real. So TIPS were just, it wasn't even a close comparison between TIPS and stocks. But how many investors knew that? Very few, because the stock selling industry wasn't promoting the benefits of TIPS. And there's not really a tip selling industry. I don't know exactly how if there's any commission paid when tips are sold. Obviously, you can buy them straight from the government. There's no commission, and that's nice. That limits your cost. But what it means is that there's no one getting money to get you to buy this asset class. You get all the money, and that's of course nice. But if you don't know to buy them, it doesn't do you any good. And so, we can't, I don't necessarily say that we should increase commissions, that we should find a way to pay for these alternate asset classes that cost us more money. But we do need to have advocates for these asset classes pushing them, promoting them. Not unfairly or not deceptively, but promoting them in an honest way. And most of what you hear today is a biased presentation of the benefits of stocks. Stocks really do have benefits in many circumstances, but we need to hear both sides of the story. I remember when I purchased I-bonds at my bank, and I obtained I locked in a real return of 3.5% real, which turned out, of course, to be an amazing deal because stocks at the time were paying a very poor long-term return. And of course, it ended up being a negative long-term return when you consider the stock crash. But I locked in a positive return so that I, of course, have more assets now to invest in stocks when stocks are offering a reasonable long-term value proposition. But I remember going into the bank, and I had to go through several people to even get anyone to sell me the I-bonds. I asked, and I said, I want to buy I-bonds, and they would sort of, pawn you off onto somebody else, and you didn't get the feeling like anyone was real anxious to sell you the I-bonds. They did eventually sell me them. But it wasn't even clear if anyone there knew what to do. They needed to do some sort of paper transaction. But, you get the sense that they were trained in selling stocks, and they do sell stocks. They have people there that sell mutual funds and all this sort of thing, and they'll sit down and give you all sorts of advice, and all of it is just the conventional passive investing advice. But nobody there to sell you tips or I-bonds or... There were CDs that I purchased back in the late 1990s that offered a great 5-year return. These were 5-year CDs, and stocks at the time were extremely overpriced. And the CDs, at one time I remember purchasing them, they were paying 7%, a little over 7%. And with inflation, they were still paying, the inflation rate around then was around 2%, 3%. So they were still paying 4%, 5% real. Something between 4 and 5% real. An outstanding value proposition. But you had to dig that sort of thing up yourself. There wasn't going to be a cover article in Money Magazine saying, look at the great deal on CDs, or look at the great deal on tips, or look at the great deal on I-bonds. No. All of the quote-unquote experts make make most of their money and make most of their fame from selling you stocks. And that's not altogether a bad thing. It's good that we hear the positive side of stocks, but we need to hear the positive side of the other asset classes. And frankly, we need to hear the negative side of stocks when there's negatives attached to stocks. And there have been. From 1995 through the first part of 2008, stocks offered a poor long-term value proposition. We need to have people who benefit from getting that point across, because that would balance the scales. We would still have people trying to sell us stocks, and I'm not sure that's even a bad thing. But then we would be hearing the other side of the story. So just as, you know, someone tries to sell you one car model, and then you hear the you might be inclined to buy it until you hear the sales pitch from the other side. We need to hear strong sales pitches for the alternatives to stocks. So we need more promotion of the super safe asset classes. Item number 13 on our shift from the discredited passive investing model to the investing model of the future, rational investing. Item number 13, we need free speech on the internet. Now, this is extraordinary. I've learned so much about how investing works in the first 6 years of the Great Debate. If you had told me on the evening of May 12, 2002, that free speech on investing issues does not exist on the internet, I would have said you were out of your mind. But in practical, realistic terms, that is the reality today. November 2008. My situation is that I did some research. I learned that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, the studies we all use to plan our retirements, I learned that those studies are analytically invalid, reading John Bogle's book. And I reported that to my fellow community members at a Motley Fool discussion board back in May of 2002. I received extraordinary support and interest. There were hundreds of people that were thrilled to learn about these realities that had, you know, they had never seen discussed before. And there were a small group of extremely abusive posters who wanted to shut down these discussions at any cost, engaging in every sort of ugly tactic imaginable, including death threats, you know, put forward against anyone who posted honestly on the safe withdrawal rate issue. And what was the response of the owner of first the Motley Fool site and then other sites as well? The response was to ban those who were posting honestly on the safe withdrawal rate issue, to prohibit any further discussions in deference to the passive investing dogmatists. The passive investing dogmatists rule the internet today. And then, of course, we took the discussion to numerous other discussion boards. And the leader of the dogmatists, John Graney, he even has a separate website where he invites people to come in and they discuss tactics for destroying these various discussion boards. If a poster gets, you know, a little too, decides to cross them by posting honestly, they'll set up these phony websites where they'll put up links to pornography and try to associate the person with that and drag the person's name through the mud. All these things go on a daily basis on the internet, with the goal of blocking people who want to learn how to invest effectively from doing so. And with the cooperation of big name experts in the field, we saw a ban on honest posting at the Vanguard Diehards board. There were hundreds of posters at that board who understand that valuations affect long-term returns and who favored honest posting on these questions. And honest posting was banned. And yet you had big-name experts like Bill Bernstein and Larry Swedrow, John Bogle, Rick Ferry, all these people participating in what I think can fairly be described as a corrupt enterprise. My view is that any discussion board that bans honest posting on such a critical question, in my view, is a corrupt enterprise. I would not be associated with it. I made my stand very clear. What I said at these discussion boards when threats were made, you know, to have me banned, I said, I will post honestly or I will post not. If I can post my honest views on how investing works, I am happy to share what I've learned with my fellow community members. If there is a requirement that I post dishonestly. And obviously, if I were to say I agree with the old school retirement studies, that would obviously be dishonest. I obviously do not believe that. All of my work is rooted in the idea that valuations affect long-term returns. I said in those circumstances, I should, ban me. Go ahead and ban me because I will not participate in any event. But I do not believe the bans are appropriate. What I believe is that each of these sites has made promises to protect the people building up the boards, the people posting constructively. And I believe the owners of these sites should be bound by their word. They should protect those of us posting constructively from those of us who have an obvious intent to do damage to the boards in order to block discussion on the flaws of their investing model, the investing model that they prefer. So if we opened up the internet to free speech applies in many areas of life, obviously. This is so pathetically obvious, it's insulting for me to say it. We allow free speech on political issues. We allow free speech on, the discussion of baseball strategies. We should allow free speech on the discussion of the flaws of the passive investing model. And I believe that in itself would be a dramatic help in moving us into the future of investing. Because what happens is, having free speech would not instantly cause everyone to become a rational investor. That's simply not going to happen. Passive investing appeals to the emotions. And at times of high stock prices, there are always going to be people who are going to be drawn to an emotional investing strategy. But I've run into many, many people during our discussions who started out thinking that passive investing made sense. And then when they heard the realities or they heard what the historical data says, they changed their minds. That's what would happen if free speech were permitted at these boards. More and more people over time would learn the realities, and it has a snowball effect. As more and more learn, they then spread the words to others, and over time, more and more investors would give up on the failed passive investing model and would adopt the rational investing model. They would learn what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates and what the historical data says about the need to change your stock allocation at times of high stock prices. Item 14, we need growth in investing blogs written by average people. Now, this is an interesting one. If you go, when I started building up the Motley Fool Retire Early board back in May of 1999. I got more serious about it in December of 1999. I used to rave about the wonderful learning resource that thousands of us created there, and I truly do think it was a wonderful learning resource. I don't think that's so true today. There's some wonderful posts in the post archives, and I do recommend you check it out. But today, there's just a sea of information on the internet on how to save effectively. There are hundreds of blogs, probably thousands, of people who learned how to save effectively and who have shared information with all the rest of us at no charge. So there's wonderful, wonderful information available. That's not true in the investing area. Now, it is true that there are thousands and thousands of blogs in the investing area. So there is lots of good information out there. But what we tend to have in the investing area is, in the saving area, it tends to be just average people who at some point in their life, something caused them to become effective savers, and they're sharing what they learned with others. In the investing area, it tends to be people who have read some books or read some magazine articles and who think that they have the answers, and they're pushing a particular approach to investing. And I don't mean to be critical. They're, in many cases, they really have learned important things, and they are sharing important things. But they, as a rule, they are not what I call normals, not average people. The breakdown on our discussion boards, it seemed to be that there were usually 10% of the people who understood that valuations affect long-term returns, the rational investors. There were usually about 10-20% of these what I call passive investing dogmatists or goons. People who just are totally into the passive investing model, can't stand to hear it questioned, ruthlessly abusive in their efforts to shut down discussions. And then there are usually about 70% of what I call normals, people who follow passive investing because it is the most popular model today, but who are totally open to having it questioned, who have a desire to learn more, who really cannot be characterized as totally rational investors or totally passive investors. They're in a middle ground. They're in a middle ground. And they lean toward passive investing because that's what the experts have told them, and they presume there must be something to it. But they are not goons. They are not ruthlessly abusive posters. Those are the people we need starting blogs. People who have an openness to different viewpoints, rather than people who start out with a bias and with a determination that bias be shoved down everyone else's throat, and who have zero tolerance for other viewpoints. What we need are more normals starting investing blogs. And I think the reason we don't see them is, I've seen this myself. I remember there was a guy, and I can't tell you, I can guess at the name of the blog, but I might have it wrong. I believe it might have been called A Penny Saved. That's my recollection. But this guy put up a notice about my calculator, the stock return predictor. And I liked it because it was honest, but it was sort of funny the way he said it. He said, oh, there's this calculator. And, he gave a link to it. But he said, to tell you the truth, he says, I can't make heads or tails out of it. You know, I can't figure out exactly how this, what this calculator tells us or how it works. So check it out and let me know. Well, I like that attitude. The guy is not, how often, you've heard me use this phrase, experts, in quotes. I always put it in quotes. Well, that guy's not pretending to be an expert. He's just a normal person saying, I want to learn how investing works. Let's discuss it. And that's what we need in the investing area. People who come to it not with an attitude of I know it all from the first day, and therefore nobody can tell me anything. I know all the marketing slogans. I've got them down. I'm not going to allow any new ideas to be considered. Investing, the conventional investing advice has failed. It has failed us. Perhaps you've noticed. We lost $8 trillion in the past 12 months following this passive investing nonsense. We need to move on to something else. We're not going to get on to something else if all that the investing blogs do is a link to people who support passive investing. They just keep repeating the same old marketing slogans over and over and over again. Timing doesn't work. Timing doesn't work. Stocks for the long run. Stocks for the long run. We need to get beyond that. And we can't get beyond that in blogs run by people. Some of the people who have backgrounds are very good. There was a guy, Felix Salmon. He did a review of the stock return predictor. He pointed out good points and bad, and his comments were very, very helpful and constructive. So there are people out there, and Felix, obviously, I would not, he has more expertise than the type of thing I'm talking about. But I'm saying it would be a big plus if the blogosphere was filled with people just trying to learn about investing, not trying to push one viewpoint, just trying to learn. Because that would be an opening. There are a lot of rational investors out there that you don't hear about. A lot. And what the passive investors would like you to believe is, all of this has been examined, and it's science, and we've learned. We know what's true and what's not, and it's not so. There are, as I say, at the Vanguard Diehards board, we had at least 100 posters who understood enough about the realities of investing to know that the passive investing slogans don't really stand up to scrutiny. And a lot of them, they would occasionally participate, but often they'd feel intimidated. They didn't want to get in trouble. They didn't want people yelling at them. They didn't want people smearing them. They didn't want to disrupt. So they kept quiet. But on a blog where the announced purpose is to learn, not to push one viewpoint, but to learn, all of these people would feel free to share what they've learned. And that's where learning comes in. That's where we advance. That's where we determine, we identify our mistakes and move forward. So that's a big thing that we need to see that would really help take us out of this twilight zone where we are today, where we know from the academic research of recent decades that the efficient market theory doesn't stand up to scrutiny, but we're still sort of stuck with all that advice that doesn't work, but that we haven't given up yet because We don't really know what does work, because we can't learn what does work until we at least open it up to a national discussion. All right. Item 15. We need a better understanding of both the uses and abuses of numbers-based analysis. Something that, you know, we started these discussions, the discussions that led me to losing confidence in the passive investing model and to, you know, wanting to promote a new model of investing, the rational investing model. We started with the examination of the retirement studies, the studies that we all use to plan our retirement, studies that are always used in media accounts of how to put together a retirement plan. And what we discovered very, very early on is that these studies are analytically invalid. They do not include adjustments for the effect of valuations, and therefore they get all the numbers wrong. And that's what sort of kicked everything off, and then we just examined the implications of what we learned, and we went down all sorts of interesting avenues of discovery. A lot of people, they will say, oh, Rob, this is, you know, this upsets people. This upsets people to point out that they got the numbers wrong. Can't you just, you know, do you really have to post about safe withdrawal rates? They say, Rob, you were a wonderful poster. We loved you when you talked about saving. You know, it was magic. But could you not talk about safe withdrawal rates anymore? And I just think that's a mistake. If we've learned that these studies are wrong, we should tell people. We should, you know, our job is to help people have successful retirements. If we discover that the studies are wrong, we should be letting people know. Why not? I've never received any answer to that question that persuades me even a little bit. All of this hesitancy, all of this fear, all of this, you know, I just chalk it up to intimidation. The reason people are afraid to talk is that the passive investing enthusiasts, the dogmatists, are just so full of themselves, you know, so arrogant that they crush dissent. And I, you know, as a journalist, I think I just respond negatively to that. I think it's important that both sides of the story be discussed. I'll never feel comfortable with that. But a lot of people just say, well, I agree, you know, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies may not work. Let's just not discuss what the safe withdrawal rate is. Let's just, you know, give your opinions. Don't even bring up numbers. Just give your opinions. Well, I think numbers have value, so I like using numbers. What we found in our discussions is not that numbers don't have value, not that the historical data is worthless. What we've learned is that the historical data makes a powerful case against passive investing. You see, those who support passive investing, they rely on the historical data. They always have. This is why they claim that their approach is science. There is a bit of truth in what they say. It's not science, but there is a bit of truth in that it is, they do use the techniques of science. They do. They use data, and that takes the discussion out of the subjective field into the objective. The problem is that they use analytically invalid methodologies. They don't use methodologies that include adjustments for changes in valuation levels. So they use numbers, which is a plus, but they get the numbers wrong, which is a negative. So what I would like to see as we move towards rational investing is a focus on getting the numbers right. Not abandoning the use of numbers, not saying, oh, the passive investing people use numbers too much and we need to just abandon numbers. No, we need to do a number. We need to work with numbers effectively. And at the same time, we need to include caveats that numbers will not give us all the answers. While numbers have great value in opening up insights, numbers do not have all the answers. And so we don't want to make the mistake that the passive investing enthusiast made of pretending that when we've looked at the numbers, we've answered all the questions. No. Numbers are a guide. Numbers are a tool. But numbers cannot ever provide all the answers. Even when you use analytically valid methodologies, the numbers do not give you all the answers. Item 16, a correction of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. You know, this is something I talk about all the time. So I felt that I had to include it in the list, but I'm not going to talk about it more here. I'll just underline the key point, which is Identifying mistakes is a plus. I have often been criticized because I have said forthrightly that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies get the number wrong. I have said that those studies are analytically invalid, and I've taken a good bit of criticism for that. People say, oh, it's mean. Rob, why are you so mean? Why do you have to tell people that they got numbers wrong? Why not? Can't you just pretend that they got them right? Can't you have to say that they got them wrong? Can't you just keep quiet? No. We learn by identifying our mistakes. Mistakes are an opportunity to learn. It would be mean if I were to ridicule people for making mistakes. That I would agree is over the line. But I do not believe that identifying the mistakes is at all over the line. I see that as my job as a journalist in this field. So we do need to correct the safe withdrawal rate studies. That one step would be huge, because you correct the studies, and the obvious question people have is, well, how is it that these studies get the numbers so wrong, and yet we're not corrected for so many years? And the answer is, the passive investing mindset leads to that situation. Passive investing is not a rational approach, it's an emotional approach. And so these safe withdrawal rate studies were never intended to give people accurate guidance. On the surface, I'm sure they were. But underneath, what was going on is that the people who did these studies, I believe, had already made a decision that they wanted people to invest heavily in stocks, regardless of valuations. And so their minds came up with these methodologies that would support that belief. That's how mistakes are made. Not necessarily intentionally. There's not necessarily intention to cause millions of busted retirements. But there is, we all have filters in our minds that cause us to look for things that support our biases, our prejudices. And if you start with a prejudice that valuations don't really matter that much, that the efficient market theory is true, your mind is going to concoct methodologies that frankly are crazy. And the methodology used in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies would never be given 10 seconds consideration in any other area of life endeavor. They were given consideration, they were taken seriously in the investing realm, because in the investing realm is dominated by emotion, not human reason. So correcting those studies, I think, would open the floodgates to criticism of all sorts of errors that have been made by passive investing enthusiasts. Item 17. We need a self-critical attitude. Well, that's really just that's what I was just discussing. These are two separate points. One, we need to correct the safe withdrawal rate studies. But two, after correcting those studies, we need to reflect on how it is that those errors were made, and we need to develop a self-critical attitude. And self-critical means, if you are investing for the purpose of financing your retirement or becoming financially, achieving financial freedom, you should want to learn about things you got wrong, because that's how you make money. You learn what you got wrong, and your returns go up, and your risk goes down, and you make more money more quickly. But what we've seen among those immersed in the passive investing mindset is not excitement about discovering errors. We've seen defensiveness, a desire to cover up errors, a desire to ignore the mistakes, come up with word games so that it sounds like, oh, it's not so bad. You'll hear the advocates of the old school safe withdrawal rate study say, oh, the safe withdrawal rate, it's only, what do they say? It's a rule of thumb. It's a rule of thumb, The studies get the numbers wrong. They're wrong by 2 full percentage points. People using the studies are going to suffer, millions are going to suffer busted retirements in the event that stocks perform in the future, anything at all, as they've always performed in the past. And what is the response you get from the people who defend the studies? Oh, it's those studies are just a rule of thumb. They're just a rule of thumb. They're somewhere within 2 or 3 percentage points of the correct answer. Well, they are somewhere within 2 or 3 percentage points, but that's not good enough. Not when you're pretending that you're putting forward science. Not when you're telling people that you did a mathematical calculation. And the reality is you got the mathematical calculation wrong. You failed to consider the most important factor. So, you know, when I say new school, I always contrast old school safe withdrawal rate studies that don't consider valuations with new school safe withdrawal rate studies that do make an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the date the retirement begins. Old school, new school, a lot of people probably look at that and say, oh, the difference is new school considers valuations, old school doesn't. And that's true. But new school is more than just considering valuations. New school is an attitude change. It's an attitude in which you want to learn what you've got wrong. You want to move forward. You always want to learn more. A rational investor always wants to learn more about how to invest effectively. So this defensiveness that is characteristic of passive investing is something we want to leave behind as we make a transition to a more realistic model for understanding how stock investing works. Number 18, community orientation. We need to stress the need for community orientation. The passive investing model is not community oriented. It's a model of people who think that you can come up with wonderful ideas by sitting in a room alone and thinking grand thoughts. I've always been a believer in community interaction. What I have scribbled here in my notes is, investing is not a solo act. Investing is not a solo act. What we see, you know, what is the core problem of passive investing? The core problem is the core problem is human weakness. We all have a human weakness. We feel we like to do what others are doing. So what does it mean when I say, you know, stocks are dangerously overpriced? What does that mean? What it means is that stocks are dangerously overpopular. It's the popularity of stocks that causes the prices to get so out of whack. That's not something that any one individual does. It's something that a community of people does. The community causes these absurd prices. It's the community of all stock investors that caused the awful bull market of the 1990s. And all the financial suffering we are living through today is the aftermath of that horrible, frightening bull market, that irresponsible bull market, that borrowing from the future bull market. Well, that was a community act. And you see, it's the efficient market theory is the intellectual framework for passive investing. The key premise of the efficient market theory is that we are all rational actors. So what the efficient market theory does is it imagines some investor somewhere and it says, oh, this investor wants to maximize his returns. So if there's anything mispriced, he's going to jump in and he's going to try to maximize his returns. And this is all mythological thinking. There are no investors who make decisions sitting in rooms. You know, they go on their computers and they discover mispricings and take advantage. The way it works is that people talk to their friends, they talk to their neighbors, they talk to their coworkers, they go on discussion boards, they listen to experts. We learn. Humans learn by interaction with our fellows. That's how we process information. All of us do that to a greater or lesser extent. And a successful investing model, an investing model that reports the realities accurately, has to take that into account. It has to consider, how do we decide whether to invest in stocks or not, or how high to go with our stock allocation? We decide by looking at what others are doing. And we don't decide just by processing data points the way this efficient market theory presumes. We are not computers on legs. We are humans. We have the capacity to engage in human reason. We also have the capacity to be influenced by our emotions. And when we see other people promoting get-rich-quick schemes, which is all passive investing really is, it's just the biggest get-rich-quick scheme that ever came down the pike. When we see people advocating that stuff, we get excited. We want to be a part of it. We want to be in on the get-rich-quick scheme. Why is it that so many people fall for these scams you read about in the paper all the time? Because it's human nature, and the people promoting the scams exploit human nature. They take advantage of it. And that's what people promoting passive investing are doing. The thing that makes it tricky is that a lot of times they're promoting it while falling for it themselves. They themselves fell for the get-rich-quick scheme, and now they're trying to get others. It's like a Ponzi scheme in that regard. Many of the people who participate in Ponzi schemes, you might, if you ever fell for one, you might be angry at them. Oh, they stole my money. But you have to remember, they stole their own money too. They fell for the Ponzi scheme before you did. A pyramid scheme. You know, it's a pyramid scheme that just keeps building up. You have a small group of people that fall for it in the beginning, and then more and more and more. That's how stock investing works at times of insanely high prices. Stock investing becomes a pyramid scheme. And what's left out of the analysis is the fact that we don't decide to invest in stocks or not by sitting in a room and looking through balance sheets and annual reports. Maybe that's what Warren Buffett does. But most of us are influenced by emotion. We're influenced by what our fellow humans think of stocks. So we need to keep that in mind at all times, so that we always try to counter it. We always try to look at the other side. We say, wait a minute, are all my friends being caught up in something dangerous here? Should I pull back? Should I try to persuade my friends to pull back? And that leads me to point 19, caring. Rational investing is all about caring. Not just, caring for yourself, but also caring for your family, caring for your loved ones, caring for the community as a whole, caring for passive investors. See, this is what always gets me when people say, oh, don't be so mean, Rob. Don't point out the errors in the old school studies. You'll hurt people's feelings. Don't be mean, Rob. Please don't be mean. And I say, what are you talking about? The people that put forward these studies, they're following these strategies themselves. They've got their money invested in this stuff. Am I being mean telling them that they got the numbers wrong so that they can make corrections in their portfolio allocation? If it's, is it mean for me? If they can't take hearing the realities of stock investing on a discussion board, how the heck are they going to take it when they lose real money in the real world? They lose so much money that their hopes for early retirement are flushed down the drain. I'm not mean. Reality is mean. Pointing, falling over a cliff is mean. The guy who puts the sign up that says danger, cliff ahead, he's not mean. He's caring. But the efficient market theory, they use all this language this person sitting in the room all by himself thinking grand thoughts, he's going to exploit anyone who comes in and makes a mistake. Oh, he'll exploit it. Listen to the language they use. That word turns me off. Exploit. I'm not out to exploit anything or anyone. They talk about beating the market. I'm not out to beat any market. I care. I don't mean to say I'm an altruist. I don't say I care only for others. I don't. I care for myself. I want to achieve financial freedom myself. But, I care for my family. I have responsibilities to my family to get the numbers right. But I care about others too. I care about the people in my community. And one of the things I always bring up at the Motley Fool, I would say, those are my friends. Those people who are using these old school studies to plan their retirements, those are my friends. I got to know these people. I posted next to them for years. And I'm supposed to keep quiet when someone's, pushing some old school study on them? Well, I can't keep quiet in those circumstances. For me to keep quiet in those circumstances is for me to deny my humanity. And I think It's for me to deny the humanity of the other, of my fellow community members. I think it's a, you know, passive investing is not only wrong, it's cruel. It's cruel. Any investing philosophy that says you should ignore valuations, what it's really saying is that you should ignore human emotions. Because what valuations do is they quantify the effect of human emotions on stock prices. So what they're really saying is ignore emotion, which, you know, what they're really saying is ignore humans. Just pretend this is some abstract exercise. No humans involved. I have no interest in writing about investing if investing is a subject in which there are no humans involved. I write about humans. That's what I do. My every word I have ever written was directed to a human. Every word I've said on a podcast is directed to a human. So tell me I can't care about my fellow investors, and you might as well tell me I can't write about investing. We need to care, and we shouldn't apologize. We need to do it openly, and we need to care, and we should stop apologizing for it. We need to do it openly, and we need to do it strongly, and we need to insist on our right to care. Any investing model that tells us not to do that is a model that belongs in the ash heap of history. So says Rob Bennett. Item number 20. Drop the us versus them stuff. Passive investors. Again, whenever I say that, I'm always talking about the dogmatist. I'm not talking about the normals, the people who follow passive investing because they've heard so many times it's a good idea that they just assume it must be true. When I talk about passive investing enthusiasts, I'm talking about the dogmatists, the ones who are strident about it, the ones who can't stand to hear other viewpoints. Something they do all the time is find fault with every other school of investing. That one of their favorite phrases is they say, this is, you know, anyone who has a view other than ours, it's investment porn. And I find that such a turnoff. A lot of passive investing is financial porn. But they don't, you know, they don't like to look in the mirror. They don't like to see it in themselves. It's a dark passive investing. Appeals to a dark side of human nature. It brings out our worst instincts, our worst emotions. This us versus them stuff. I saw this on boards. We would have, how many times have I heard this? People would say, you know, we started talking about, the great debate began at the Motley Fool board. And ultimately, the goons were successful in getting it banned, getting any discussion of the New School Studies banned. At the Motley Fool board. So a group of us that wanted to engage in honest posting, we started a new board at nofeeboards.com. That board was, you know, that whole entire site was ultimately destroyed by the goons. But we had a new board there, and it was called the Fire Board, Financial Independence Retire Early. And we used to discuss the new school research. And there would be, you know, we would be smeared. The people at the goons at the Motley Fool board would smear the discussion board, and these people would go around all over the internet and you know, put up this nasty, ugly stuff. And of course, this was done for intimidation purposes. But people would say to me, Rob, you know, don't say anything bad about the old school studies. Just talk about the new school studies. Here, you've got this board, this fire board, and you don't need to ever say that the old school studies are wrong. Well, I think you do. If you've got community members, and there were hundreds of them at the Motley Fool board who wanted honest posting to be permitted, you count those people out of the community because they're stuck in a community where honest posting has been banned. Not this boy. It's an outrageous act to ban honest posting, and it reflects on the people who endorse passive and fasting, that this is the sort of act they're driven to. It reflects on them. And I've never bought this idea that we should have different board communities at each other's throat. There was just a discussion the other day, just yesterday, at the Vanguard Diehards board about, you know, should we allow honest posting here? Should we open this up? You know, Mel Lindauer doesn't like it. Mel was on the thread, and he's are we going to let Mel decide what we can talk about, what we can't talk about? He's got his own board. He's got bogleheads.org. You know, should he also control what we say here? And one of these guys came on, Drip Guy. He's a regular at the Goon Central board, and he says, "Oh, if people are objecting to what you say, you should just find a different community, go somewhere else." Why? Because 10% of a community are goons. The 90% should go to a different community and let the goons take over. Why? How about the goons go to a different community? The site rules at the Morningstar site permit honest posting on investing. In very strong language, the same is true at Motley Fool. Same is true at Early Retirement Forum. Same is true at Bogleheads.org. Why is it always the people posting constructively who have to find a different community because there's a small group of angry, passive investing dogmatists who can't tolerate the expression of different points of view? I don't go for this us versus them stuff. The only extent to which I go for it is the one them that I am against are abusive posters. If you can't follow the rules of the board community, you shouldn't be there. Those people should indeed take a walk and find their own community. But every one of them clicked a button that said okay to the site rules before they began posting. My view is you click that button, you've made a promise to your fellow community members that you will honor the rules of the board. And those willing to honor the rules of the board have every right in the world to stay in the community. I would say they not only have a right, they have a responsibility. When the most constructive posters, when the people of intelligence and integrity leave, the community goes downhill. I've seen it happen half a dozen times now. So I say that those of us advocating rational investing not only have a right to continue to post at boards at which abusive posters have shown up, We have a responsibility to do what we can to save those boards. Item 21, government regulation. I don't have any specific government regulation to propose, but I include this on the list because I put this list together after reading the article in the New York Times about the behavioral revolution. And then there were 525 comments on that, and many of those comments were suggesting that government regulation is needed. And some of it is not strictly investing. They're talking about the banking crisis and all this sort of thing. But it was all kicked off by Greenspan's, Alan Greenspan's comments that he made mistakes. And so the thought is we need more government regulation to prevent stock crashes of the type we've experienced. And my view is there are times when government regulation is appropriate, but I tend to think of government regulation as a last course, not a first course. I would rather we do voluntary type things of the things I'm talking about here. Just open the internet up to free speech and on investing questions, and that would do it. Change the rules of investing journalism so that we get more people who are not beholden to the stock selling industry. That would change it. People would hear both sides of the story. When we report the Dow numbers or the S&P numbers, report valuation adjustment numbers so that people would know when stocks were truly dangerous. Those sorts of things would do it. But it may be that there are some cases where government regulation is appropriate. And so I include that on the list so that it's one of the items to consider. But I'll leave it to others to come up with government regulations that they think would be helpful. Item 22. Separate advice, separate/different advice for the middle class. I bring this up because it comes up in discussions with experts. A lot of times, I've tried to go to investing experts for help with the problems we've suffered in our discussion board communities in recent years. And the experts, you know, they all seem to respond in similar ways. There seems to be a great reluctance to acknowledging that the efficient market theory has been discredited. There's a feeling that, you know, the experts have to know this. They're familiar with the literature. In the literature, there's lots of literature showing this. But they seem reluctant to state it too clearly, too boldly, too openly. And just in general, the experts seem to be aware that valuations affect long-term returns. Some of them, you know, have even gone to the point of writing entire chapters of books detailing what I think could fairly be described as a rational investing approach. But then they just discard that. They have one chapter that does that, and then the next chapter they go right back into all the passive investing marketing slogans. They just sort of forget that they said these things. I've tried to ask questions, to drill down and find out what's really in the mind of the experts. And one of the things that comes through sometimes is there's a sense that the sense I pick up is that the experts feel that there have been suggestions of this, that they give better advice to people who pay them. People who pay them for advice, they feel more comfortable giving the full story, giving a more realistic story to people who pay them. But when they're speaking in public or speaking to a newspaper reporter, they feel that they need to give overly simple advice because people will misunderstand. In other words, say you were to report the safe withdrawal rate accurately. One of the problems you might run into is the safe withdrawal rate changes depending on valuation levels. So say you report it at the top of the price bubble that the safe withdrawal rate was 2% for a high stock allocation, which is accurate, instead of 4%, which is what the old school studies say. That article might get stored, you know, on the internet somewhere, and someone might pull it up today. Someone planning a retirement in November 2008 might pull it up. Now, the safe withdrawal rate today is around 5%, not 2%. Well, that person might read 2%, and they may, you know, if they don't understand that the safe withdrawal rate changes, they would have bad information. I think that the approach that has been followed of just giving the wrong numbers with the thought that, well, the old school studies get the numbers wrong, but they're simple. You know, it's we just always give the same number, 4%. So we'll never be more than 2 or 3 percentage points off. Well, actually, they are more than 2 because when prices are very low, the safe withdrawal rate can go as high as 9%. So in that case, they're 7 points off. I don't think it works. I don't think this approach of you know, the suggestion that I've heard is that maybe if you pay the experts, you know, for advice, they'll point out, well, the old school studies aren't really right. The numbers, you know, it differs according to valuation. And they'll sort of give you more of the full story. I think we should not have separate advice for the middle class. It certainly makes sense that if you're talking to someone that's paying you, a paying client, you can go into more detail. So I certainly have no problem with the experts telling, you know, in their general advice, saying, look, you know, if you're really putting a retirement plan together, maybe you want to come in for a visit and we'll go over it in more depth. That makes all the sense in the world. That's what paid advice is all about. That's the benefit. We'll tailor it to your particular situation. But I think we do need to be sure that the advice given to the middle class when you're just speaking to a reporter or speaking at a speech, that advice does need to be accurate. And if you don't make an adjustment for valuations, it's not accurate because valuations affect long-term returns. There's no question about this. So I do think we need to be accurate, but if we are giving separate advice for the middle class, then we at least need to detail that. To the extent that there's any expert out there who feels I absolutely don't feel comfortable letting the average person know that valuations affect long-term returns because that will make the advice slightly more complicated. Well, then you need to let them know. You need to say, look, when I cite these old school studies, these numbers aren't really accurate. If you want the accurate numbers, come in for a visit. And You know, but these are what the old school studies say. They just say it's always 4%, even though that's not really right. I guess what I'm saying is I don't believe with the premise. I don't believe the premise that we should give different advice for people who are not paying clients. But if we are going to give different advice, if there are some who decide to do that, then they need to include cautions so that people know that if they use the old school studies, they're not really getting the straight story. Item 23, we need more of a focus on the basics. And I'm going to stop with this one. But there's so much investing advice out there. The real weakness is the basics. And that's why, that's all that I address. I have, I don't know how many, this is what, podcast 39. I've now done 39 podcasts. Most of them are about an hour long. 39 hours of material. There's scores of articles at my site. Every single one of them, I don't think there's one exception, deals with the basics of investing. This is where the problems are, the ABCs, the fundamentals. So I think as we make a transition from passive investing to rational investing, we always need to be reminding ourselves every day. Anyone giving investing advice should remind himself or herself, the key is getting the basics right. Now, that doesn't mean that every single person should be doing what I'm doing. We need people focusing on the sophisticated stuff. But boy, do we need work on the basics. The basics is where we got it wrong. And that poisons everything. Get the ABCs wrong and everything you build on top is wrong. So I urge a renewed commitment to focus on the basics. The basics of how investing works in the real world. Good luck with your investing strategies.